Mrs. Pauline Passmore, Reel 1.
My name is Pauline Passmore. My maiden name was Jessie. I was born in 1926 at Turner's Hill in the East Side. I was the youngest of five children. My eldest sister, Catherine, and three brothers, Barry, Harry, and John. My parents came up from Dorset. They were dairy farmers, and Turner's Hill gave greater access to the sale of milk to London. When I was born, I caused a great kerfuffle because it was late on a Sunday afternoon. Father hadn't finished milking, and it was getting dark. There was my mother with four young children under eight in the house, and trying to persuade Harry and Barry to go up to the dairy to fetch my father. And one of them looked out and said, "It's dark, Mummy." So Mummy lit the hurricane lamp, and eventually they went off. And so I arrived at about 7 o'clock on the Sunday evening. We were there at Turner's Hill for about 3 years, I suppose. And then my parents moved to a larger farm at Ringmer. And I started school at Ringmer, and my brothers and sisters went to the grammar school in Lewes, and my sister went to the secondary school. I can remember being taken to school first on the bar of my brother's bike. Then my father decided to move back to Dorset, and we went to Askerswell, halfway between Dorchester and Bridport. And then unfortunate troubles occurred, monetary ones, and he moved to Shroton. We moved to Frome, and it was at Frome that I took the scholarship. Then we came back to near Shaftesbury, and I went to the high school in Shaftesbury. I started there the year before the war, 1938. It always makes me laugh looking back, because we all wore bright red hats. And when we came back to school after war was declared in 1939, we had to practice in case there was an air raid, which meant taking our bag and our coats, which were hung on our school chairs, and walking down the road to the trenches. And I always envisaged an aeroplane flying over and seeing this zigzag line of bright red hats. But nothing ever happened there on the hill at school. Now, during that time, or before the war, my two older brothers, one joined the army and the other joined the Air Force in the boys' service. My younger brother had finished his schooling, and he was helping with the dairy. When war was declared, John, the youngest one, immediately joined the LDV, although he wasn't really old enough. And I can have a picture of him proudly wearing his armband and clutching a 12-bore shotgun. Then we came up to Sussex after my sister married, and my father was manager for an estate at Partridge Green in West Sussex. And my brothers in the forces. Barry was in the army in the RASC, and with the declaration of war he was in the BEF when it went to France, and in due course he was evacuated via Dunkirk, and he had trouble with his feet then because he sat up so close to the smokestack on the small boat that broke them over. My brother Harry finished his training, and I think he was sent to Manston or one of those RAF centres that had, was very heavily bombarded in the early years of the war. Eventually he was sent to the Middle East, and they did a journey by boat by the Cape of Good Hope. They stopped in Cape Town, we knew that because of course his letters were all heavily censored, but he met a girl in Cape Town who wrote to us and said that she'd met Harry, and so of course from there we knew that his ship had gone to Cape Town. And he then sailed on up and spent his war in Egypt and Kenya in between times. He was very regular in writing to us, and of course communications increased greatly when we had the letters that were the airmail letters that could be photographed, although of course nothing private could be said. But occasionally we received small parcels from abroad, mainly materials for my sister and I to make dresses. It took a long time, there's no knowing where they went in the time. My eldest brother Barry, he was right up into Tripoli, and eventually when things were looking happier in Africa, and they began to think of the invasion in Europe, he was sent to what's the name of that island? Cyprus. He was sent to a Cyprus regiment because he could deal with horses, and they were going to use mule transport. And of course there were the local Cypriots who didn't think that anybody but a Cypriot could handle a mule, and they weren't really prepared to take instructions from a British sergeant. But when he proved that he could master a mule, everything went well from then on, and eventually they landed in Italy, and he and his mules went northward. My sister had married a soldier, and he was not sent abroad again until the latter part of the war, because being a sergeant he was needed for training the recruits. I can't think of any more at the moment. My brother Harry had trained as an aircraft fitter, but later in the war he was able, because of the pressure, to switch over to do the engineering side of it. And of course after the war, when he was demobbed, all that training was extremely useful in farming. My youngest brother John stayed working on the land throughout the farm, throughout the war. He was very unhappy in a way because he wanted to join the Navy, thinking that, you know, there was a brother in the Army and a brother in the Air Force. But when he went for his medicals, it was found that he was very deaf. And then, of course, he had to put up with all the sneering remarks that he got at times because he wasn't in the forces. So, but he went on and he worked hard on the land, and it was very necessary to have someone who had some strength, because although they had land girls, they were not as strong as a man when it came to lifting these enormous sacks of corn. Which were they? 200 weight, some of them. And so as he ended up marrying a land girl, and they're very happy still. I sometimes wonder if all the stress that my two elder brothers went through during the war abetted in their early decease. One died, he was 48, and the other one at 52. But that's just my thoughts on the subject. It seems so sad. It seems such a young age now, looking back.
Did they ever talk to you about their experiences, Pauline?
If my brothers spoke to me about the war, it was about the nice things, like swimming in the nice warm seas in the Mediterranean, and when they got that far, or else when one of them was staying on a big ranch down in Kenya, where he spent most of his leaves. And after the war was over, the children of that rancher came over to England to finish their education, so they met up with him again. But never, to me as such, it was only bits that I heard passed on of anything that was really unpleasant. I think it was the same with the First World War. When asking my father about that, he never said anything about the unpleasant things. I can remember him mentioning about the tot of rum that they had always before they went over the top, and him saying that it never tasted the same nowadays. And well, really, from my brothers, I only ever heard the more pleasant side of things that made them laugh or cheered them up in some ways. But there again, everybody was putting a face on it to cheer themselves up. We mightn't have had much during the war, but we had a great deal of homemade fun. Now, my elder sister, Kathy, after she married, she moved up to her husband's family in Norfolk. And then when she was expecting her first baby, she came back to us in Sussex. And after the baby was born, my mother looked after the baby, and Kath returned to farm work and worked in the dairy. She wasn't a member of the land army, but as she was doing it regularly, eventually, after a lot of persuasion, she managed to get a land army uniform. But I mean, she wasn't officially with it to start with, because she was married and had a baby. But she was working as hard as any of the others, with milking twice a day. We had three other land girls, and one of them married my youngest brother. They always seemed very cheerful, and though of course, having been brought up in the town, they found the mud a bit difficult to begin with, but there again, you begin to accept it. And two of them had reasonable lodgings on the farm, but of course they said it was cold. But I know that they were well fed, because Miss Dunbar was a good cook. Joan, the one who married my brother, her parents had a holiday home in the village, and it was made of two railway carriages, and so she didn't have far to go, so as far as I know she had all the home cookings. As far as I know, the land girls with which I were acquainted were happy in their work. If yes, it was hard work and it was long hours, but we just had to keep on. It wasn't any good complaining, if there was anything to really complain about, because it didn't help matters, didn't put anything further forward. And it always seemed to me that everybody had a joke for everybody else. But there again, I was that much younger and knew so little about what was going on in the working world. So all I can say is that they worked long hours, and they always looked very smart in their dungarees or their breeches and boots. I thought the nice green jerseys looked very warm, and eventually they went on, some of them went on parades, you know, to show off the what the land girls were doing. But it's difficult to say, because these girls worked on a private estate. They were not like the many of them that joined the land army and were based at a set point and sent out to various farms. They might not have remained on the same farms as the need arose for their services. It's so clear in my mind the day that war was declared. My father and I had been to church at Shroton, and walking back up the street, the shepherd leaned over his garden wall and said to Father in a Dorset voice that it's come, you know. And that was the first we knew of it. I can't remember much preparation, because my mother thought it was extremely unfair if we should buy lots and lots of things in advance to stock up with the food or sugar. You know, you took what was there and what was rightfully considered to be your share. Though of course she was a good cook and always made lots of jam, and so we hadn't thought about things like air raids. But there again, when we were at Shroton, I can remember looking up at a vast sky and enormous clouds very, very high up, and seeing tiny little marks against them, and my sister saying, those are German planes and they're going to bomb Bristol. I haven't the slightest idea how she knew that it was going to be Bristol, but anyway, then later on they repeated this several times in that September after Dunkirk. Must have been. And coming back, one of the bombers was pursued and shot down, and it crashed in the village, well, a field to the side of the village. And for days afterwards, there was the most horrible smell permeating the whole village, it seemed to see. I presume now, you know, it wasn't just the smell of the plane, it was of the people who died in the plane, which burst into flames. Also, at that time, I remember a Spitfire. It seemed just to be skimming the roofs of the farm buildings, and it was so low we could see the silhouette of the pilot in it. And there we stood in the line, in the farmyard, cheering him on. So far as I know, he hopefully landed safely wherever he was going. Then we came back up to Sussex, and by then the LDV, which my youngest brother John had joined, had become the Home Guard, and they were gradually issued with their uniforms. And he came, would come home with various flashes to be sewn on the jacket. And he had my mother puzzled, because he said it must be sewn on in fish stitch. My mother never heard of fish stitch, so he came up with the idea of herringbone stitch, which turned out to be right. And guess who had to sew them on? Quite right, it was me. When we were in Sussex at Partridge Green, the Home Guard were called out and assembled in the village. I suppose they must have done it on a rotor. I know in those days that someone with a whistle on a bike cycled through the village rotating one of these rattles to let us know when an aircraft, our enemy, was approaching. And one night when my brother was on duty in the village, a plane crashed near us, well, fortunately on the outskirts, and the engine from it went through the roof of a bungalow, and it finished up in a baby's cot. But having been warned of the raid, the people had retreated to a shelter. I didn't quite know where their shelter would have been, and the baby was safe. And then when it was daylight, the Home Guard had to go and search for remnants of the plane or whatever they expected, whether anybody got out alive. And I know that John was turning over things in the garden and moved the leaves of the marrow patch, and there was a hand. That was one of the nasty things he did tell me. Once when coming home from school in Horsham, the train was chased by a German plane. Normally we seem to be out of the line of the way they went back to Germany or wherever, but this time it seemed to follow us down the railway line from Christ Hospital to Southwater. And like the silly idiots we were leaning out of the window watching. And I think that was the time that one plane came down at the Squinstead. We had bombs one night, but fortunately they were all wide of the mark and just left craters in the field. And then in right toward the end of the war, our school was shot up, but it was a time at of the school parties. So as it was a junior school party, that would be the girls under 13, or maybe 14, they were all in the hall, and we had great delight in thinking, if Mr. Turnant had been standing there by the blackboard and it was such and such class scripture lesson, she'd have had it. Because one bullet came in through the window and went through the blackboard. Macabre lot, weren't we? But there again, if you didn't laugh at things, you might have cried. But there was great rejoicing always at home when another letter arrived from one of the brothers. And when Barry was home after Dunkirk, he had a long leave, but also he wasn't being sent anywhere immediately, so he was able to get his leave increased and to work on the farm until he was sent. And then, of course, the day he had to go back, he forgot his train pass and got into Horsham station and couldn't hand it in. So he checked up with the military police or someone there on Horsham station and hung around till my train came in from and I could go home, and told me I had to search through his belongings and find his pass and bring it in the next morning to give it to the military police, prove that he wasn't AWOL. Now, my father was an air raid warden, and he duly had his whistle and his badge, and would go and look round the farm. Being at the end of a lane, there wasn't a great deal to oversee that way, just to make sure everyone had drawn their curtains and no light could be seen. And of course, that was a job, getting the material for the blackout curtains. They were not on, it was not on ration, and one had to make sure that the screens fitted really closely. Not like with the house I'm living now, there were wooden shutters that you could pull up, and also these to put just in the two downstairs rooms. But they were put in there long, long ago, because the house is about 250 years old. But we got the material, and that was one of my small jobs, to go round and make sure all the curtains were drawn. But of course, when we came to Partridge Green, that was the first time my mother had lived in a house with electricity, and she had the problems of learning how to cook with an electric stove after using a three-burner oil stove in various farmhouses. One thing with the blackout curtains, my sister acquired enough material and she made herself, and one for me as well, a dress each, and we decorated them with rows of different coloured bias binding round the bottom. We really felt we were quite it. But of course, she was very good at cutting out and machining, but I was left to do all the stitching and finishing off. Of course, during the war, we had to do lots of make, do and mend, like knitting little square patches to be darned into the heels of socks, and making your own clothes or altering things that would fit smaller children.